Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you have a problem that's been difficult to diagnose or treat, Dr. Donna can give a second opinion to help you and your vet keep your pets healthy. Email your questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. The Expert Vet is a production of 8paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content, and is brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that makes Amino Active, proven safe and effective for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. This show is also brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pooch's dinner. And Donna's dream for a super low-carb canned cat food has come true. Halo's new pate-style cat food has an amazingly low 5% carbohydrates. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Well, Dr. Donna, this is the first time that we're able on The Expert Vet to talk about our awesome, amazing, incredible dog film festival. I know it's October 17th of 2015. It's a ways off, but it's very exciting to be able to not only let people know that it's happening, let them know that they can submit films. You go to dogfilmfestival.com or on radiopetlady.com. There'll be a link to it. But the super awesome califragilistic expialidocious thing is that Dr. Donna, Dr. Patrick, and Dr. Sue, all from Radio Pet Lady Network, are going to be doing a roundtable with me in the beautiful Symphony Space, 760-seat proscenium theater, about early detection of cancer. Early detection is a way to save your dog's life. So we're going to be talking about that from a lot of different perspectives. And Dr. Donna, this is something that is so front and center in your world, because you're often called in situations where a dog, the people or another vet, the owners or another vet say, something isn't right, and you've been able to undiagnose cancer or diagnose cancer when people thought it was something else. So you've had some extraordinary examples of that recently with some senior dogs. Talk a little bit about senior screening and how that fits into the early detection idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. You know, one thing, as an internal medicine specialist, I'm dealing constantly with dogs that have diabetes, they might have kidney problems, cats with the, you know, they have chronic medical problems.
Yes.
And many times we get so wrapped up and so focused in, my dog is diabetic. But, you know, and you give the daily insulin injections and you're plugging along and you're going to the vet when you should and you feel like things are going great. But we can't forget that these are generally older patients, and you know, even though we know they have diabetes, like, don't forget, we still have to do some annual screening, because good grief, they could get other things. You know, the diabetes isn't going to be the only thing that they have. And one example that I love to use is of a dog called Leo. We love Leo.
What kind of dog is Leo?
Leo is a little poodle.
Aww.
And I had been treating him for years together with his regular veterinarian years as a diabetic, doing very well, no problems, feeling absolutely fine. And when his veterinarian called and said, oh, we saw Leo, for his annual checkup, he's doing really well. And I said, oh, did you make sure to take some screening x-rays? And he's like, well, no, he's doing fine. And I said, well, you know, let's get him back and just take some basic chest and belly x-rays. Because again, he's an older dog. At that point, he was like 13. And, you know, we're looking for old age changes or the development of tumors or anything. And lo and behold, Leo had a humongous lung tumor, primary lung tumor. I mean, this thing took up a huge proportion of his left lung lobe, and no cough, no difficulty breathing. Of course, Leo is older and he was very sedentary. It wasn't like he was out like racing around the neighborhood. But and had he done that, he might have had more signs. But you know, the vet sent these films to me. I'm like, wow, it even surprised me. I'm like, well, I guess I wouldn't have expected that. But it just goes to show that these dogs can, you know, cancer is one of those insidiously onset things. You don't always feel sick from it until, you know, unfortunately, sometimes till it's very advanced. So
is that more true in dogs than in us? Or we often hear even of humans who are, you know, marathon runners, and then they have some digestive disturbance for a couple of weeks, and they finally go to the doctor about it, and they're told it's pancreatic cancer, and they're not going to live very long.
Right.
But by the time they were symptomatic, it was too late. Do dogs, are they more apt to give us symptoms of cancer? Well, certainly not with lymphoma or even, by the time you have bone cancer and you're limping, that's a pretty big bone tumor, right?
I mean, in all honesty, I think, you know, obviously because of the communication barrier that there is. I mean, I think dogs may know that they have symptoms. They may not be feeling as well, but communicating that to their owner, because dogs and cats are pleasers. They see you, they're excited.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if they're so arthritic, they're going to jump out of bed and they're going to greet you. And, you know, and so they're, and they do tend to be quite stoic. So I think many times we see things far more at a more advanced stage than they do in people, especially people who pay attention to their bodies and are like, something's not quite right.
Right.
But I think as a general rule, we see things when they're far more advanced, which makes these annual screening wellness checks, even in if you have a dog that has another disease process or a dog who is perfectly fine and you think they have no issues, they're over 7 years old, you should be screening them. Leo ended up going to surgery, having out his lung tumor, and he is, you know, at this point alive about 2 years after that surgery. I mean, he's this old man now. And I mean, guaranteed he would have eventually had signs from that lung tumor. And, you know, but I've got to believe that he has lived a much longer time than he would have had, you know, had we not found that tumor. And, you know, I liken the early screening, you know, the annual screening and the senior screening programs to go in and get your mammogram, go in and get your colonoscopy when you're over a certain age. I mean, you don't feel sick, but you can still have a tumor in your breast. You can still have polyps or precancerous polyps in your colon. You know, it's all that screening that saves our lives and lets us live a longer, you know, more viable life.
And if you have a 13-year-old dog, which is already a very senior dog, and you bought him 2 years, perfectly good quality years, he's still a diabetic, that early detection saving a life, that's not just a phrase that, you know, people kick around. Dr. Sue also is always talking about getting chest x-rays and belly x-rays on an annual basis. And I guess for a senior, especially a dog like that might be at the vet twice a year, you actually could, you wouldn't do the x-ray twice a year, but you'd have a senior visit twice a year, right? To look for changes.
Right. And looking for mild weight loss, unexpected weight loss, changes like that. I mean, those things are so important. And this is a nice segue into another Roxy. I want to talk a little bit about Roxy, near and dear to my heart. She's an 11-year-old Jack Russell. And so same thing. She was perfectly asymptomatic, no symptoms, no weight loss, just bouncing around like a Jack does, feeling great. But she had mild liver enzyme elevations, just mild, not even like, you know, just a few hundred points. You know, I mean, it wasn't, you know, this alkaline phosphatase that we always talk about. I mean, it just wasn't all that exciting. Her vet had even done a liver function test. Things looked good. But this liver enzyme in her stayed elevated for up to 12 weeks. I mean, and they were kind of just watching it, wait and watch. And they gave her some liver support medicines and, you know, this, and it really wasn't getting better. It wasn't getting worse, but it didn't get better. I was on the phone with this veterinarian discussing another case, and he mentioned it to me, and I was like, you know, it's been a long enough time. I would recommend you get an ultrasound on that dog, because there's something going on in that liver. That liver still has those elevated enzymes, even though she's not symptomatic. And Roxy ended up having a primary liver tumor.
Whoa.
And again, she had a lot of other changes in her liver as well. She had like little nodules of regeneration, because her liver is old and kind of drains the whole body, you know. But there was a primary liver tumor in there. And again, dogs can live with liver tumors for a very long time, because the liver is such a huge organ, and it's not until that liver tumor gets, hers was about 5 centimeters, you know, so a couple inches, but But it's not, you know, that thing could have gotten to be 10, 12, 14 centimeters before it would take up enough of her liver to really impact her, probably.
So, I mean, that's an incredible example of early detection.
So again, Roxy went to surgery. It was a malignant liver tumor.
Wow.
But it came out, and her liver enzymes never went to fully normal. They got a lot better, but they were just a titch still above normal, and so we continued to monitor. But again, for a year and a half out after we followed her, and, you know, and so it's like you're going to find things, and your vet is not – I always, you know, playing the advocate to the client as well. You know, your vet's not just not money hungry. They're not just like, oh, we have to, like, take x-rays. We have to take this. We have to, you know, it's all about this early detection, finding things that – you know, and our best news at the end of the day is, nope, the x-rays look good. They're clean. Nope, the ultrasound doesn't show any signs of liver, major liver disease. You know, those are good. That's good news because, you know, that it isn't always what we get.
Very much not always. But, I mean, I'm so happy for them. I mean, we'd think liver cancer. You hear liver cancer, you think, bye-bye, Roxy. That's
right.
Just what we think. We think of liver cancer in humans as being deadly. We know that we lost my Teddy to the liver cancer when it was, I don't know, his only symptom was just not feeling well and not wanting to eat. But obviously that symptom he'd been covering for a long time. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. We need to talk. We need to make people understand again about early detection, at what age we want you to start thinking about it. And also discuss a little bit the aspect of health insurance, because would they cover a diagnostic ultrasound if it came out normal? I don't know. I need to ask my company, Healthy Pause. But I can tell you that if you did it and you found the liver cancer, they would cover the entire thing, including the surgery. So, you know, that's another tricky issue. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back after this quick word.
This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxaCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked, and shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxaCheck titer test for cats, too.
We are back. Early detection saves lives. Just to remind you to put in your calendar October 17th, 2015. You can meet Dr. Donna and Dr. Patrick and Dr. Sue. We're going to be discussing early detection saves lives and supplementation and diet and how chemo works and how surgery works. Explain a little. And as a board-certified internist, Dr. Donna goes to the same kinds of training and the same kinds of veterinary meetings that Dr. Sue and other oncologists do. You are an oncologist, although not board certified. An internist is a board certified specialty, and oncology is one of the things that you specialize in. That's important for people to understand also, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you had a good internist who you had learned to trust, that really is like an oncologist, although you might have a very complicated case where you wanted to have an oncologist help you with a case. At what age do you think this kind of screening is something that should be on? Is it 6 years old for a large breed dog and 8 for a small breed dog? Or do you have a number in mind?
I mean, you know, and that's why I do. You're exactly right. I mean, I kind of go with 7 years old for everybody.
And, that makes sense.
You know, and if you had a, you know, a giant breed, you know, yes, might you start that at 6, but I wouldn't start it in a smaller dog later than 7. You know, I would use 7 as the basic cutoff.
And at that age, when you go in for your yearly checkup and you have check your Lyme disease titer, in some people you might do VaxaCheck, you might check your vaccine titer to see if even an older dog, maybe the immunity against some of the core diseases might not be strong. And then is it the chest x-ray the most important?
You know, they're equally important. I mean, disease can show up, you know, in many places. And in all honesty, if we had to pick one cavity, probably the abdomen. There's a lot more organs in the abdomen. There's a lot more things to go wrong. Bladder stones are often there, small kidneys, problems with the intestine, problems in the spleen and the liver. I mean, the belly has a lot more going on. It's not do one versus the other, but, you know, the chest screening, you know, becomes important for heart size, early detection of heart disease, lung tumors. And then, of course, when you take both chest and belly, you're also getting a good look at the spine, you know, looking for evidence of issues with the spine and instability. And, you know, there's a lot of benefit to, you know, both cavities.
Important to realize, that belly is filled with a lot of your essentials you can't do without. So let's say you get a baseline. In a sense, it could be a baseline if it comes back as there's nothing remarkable, nothing interesting.
Right.
Then you have something to compare to when a year later you do it again. Here's a kind of tricky one, though. We hear about this in human medicine. It's obviously just as true in animal medicine, that it's not really how important how good the machine or the tech is, it's who's reading it.
Correct.
So how much confidence should we have in our own primary vet to do a really careful, excellent reading that in a human might be done by a board certified radiologist?
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. And now, you know, many, many veterinarians in this country now have digital x-rays where it's all done, you know, it's on the digital system. And if you request, your veterinarian can send those x-rays to be reviewed by a board-certified veterinary radiologist.
Wow.
And the fee for that is not cost prohibitive. It is, you know, it depends on which clinic, where you're located. But for a fairly nominal fee, your vet can, in some clinics, and I would say many clinics, it's standard. They take x-rays. The next step, and it's built into the cost of x-ray, is it goes for review.
Wow,
and
that's good.
The benefit of technology today and digital films, because, you know, somebody in, you know, Omaha, Nebraska can be reading your films from New York City or, you know, in just a blink of an eye. And so they're, you know, and that's, it's okay to ask, to say, you know, can you have a, you know, can these be reviewed by a radiologist? And the answer should be yes. It can always be read by a radiologist. I mean, that service is all over this country.
And is that something I would have to say, since so many of us know of dogs and people where even someone being super smart and cautious and trying to do early detection, whatever it is, got missed. Do you think that we should just say, as the expert vet's opinion, that a review by a board certified veterinary radiologist is wise? Is something, why would you not do it if you're going to?
Can I tell you, Tracy?
Yes.
I send every x-ray I take personally, even as a board certified internist, it gets reviewed by a board certified radiologist. I don't claim to be a radiologist, so I usually look at films and I'm like, yeah, I feel like I see everything there is, but, you know, that's not my my specific training.
Right.
I didn't have 4 extra years of radiology training.
Oh my goodness. Is that how much more they have?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just like me. I had my 4 extra years of internal medicine training. And, you know, so that's it. That's their specialty. And there is value to that. Now, I would say 95% of the time, I feel like I've seen everything there is to see. But, you know, it's just, I'm dealing with a life. I'm dealing with someone's family member. I'm not going to take the chance that, you know, two sets of eyes are better than one. You know, I mean, it's just, and someone who even has more specialized training than I do in that particular field. I would go as far as to say my recommendation is every film that's taken should be reviewed by a board certified radiologist. It's not like it's unavailable. It's a very readily available, cost effective procedure.
You've paid X $100 for your dog to be maybe slightly sedated, depending on the dog or the body part.
$20 to $30 extra bucks, and you've got a guarantee.
Yes. So you go to all that trouble and you might have a false sense that everything's okay if it hasn't been read properly. And you see X number of liver x-rays a week or a month, and a radiologist sees that many in an hour.
Right.
Or a day. So, I mean,
right.
You know, to them, what to you is something very subtle. And also with x-rays, it also has to do with the angle at which something's seen, right?
So you that's the kind of feedback you get back. And they say, you know, keep track of this one particular location and spot, retake the film, or, you know, just, you know, try to get a different angle. I mean, there's real value there.
Well, the thing that amazes me, I honestly really didn't know, if only my poor Teddy, and you were away and you kept saying, I can get access to the internet if you can get that so-called board certified internist, that's how I'm going to refer to him for the rest of his life and mine, to send me any of these images. I'd like to look at them, but I mean, he couldn't even figure out how to share them. But I didn't understand that you could have a liver tumor in a dog if you were lucky enough to catch it early, like you did for Roxy, because you were hyper vigilant about her blood, and you take out the tumor and the dog lives. Now, did that dog have chemotherapy afterwards?
She didn't. And you have to keep in mind, there are lots of different types of tumors that can affect the liver. The type of what we call primary liver tumor is a solid singular mass that it's a growth and it's one single mass.
I see.
Now, that's amenable to surgical removal and follow up as you monitor that spot. Something like lymphoma, which is actually a cancer of the lymph cells, the blood cells, that can actually, when it affects the liver, it completely invades the liver. There's not one mass. There's no surgery that can be done there. So in poor Teddy's case, like, it was a diffuse cancer of the liver and in all of his organs, because that's what lymphoma does. It's actually a blood cancer that moves into organs, as opposed to like a primary breast cancer or a primary liver cancer that actually is a solid growing mass that can be removed.
And if you catch it small and you catch it early and it hasn't spread, you now have extended life, quality of life, and you don't even need radiation and or chemo. Right. It's important for all of us to hear this because, you know, to the rest of us, it's like liver cancer is one thing, but cancer in your liver can be many different things depending on where it began and how it's presenting itself in that organ. I do remember, we'll go to a quick break, but I remember, and those of you listening might remember, that there was a number of years ago that Dr. Donna noticed on, because I'm like the luckiest human on earth, I've got my own very nice vet and I have Dr. Donna always looking over my shoulder so generously, that Jazzy, my old, very lame girl, had elevated liver enzymes. She's been on NSAIDs and meloxicam for years. And my own vet said, it's just slightly elevated, don't worry. When we come back from the break, Donna, I think we need you to reiterate to people that that is like saying wait and watch cancer grow in some sense. It's not something to be passive and ignore. Because when an owner hears, it's no big deal, we'll wait and watch, we think, I'll see you next year. And that's, I don't believe at all your philosophy. We'll be right back after this quick break.
This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxaCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. And shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxaCheck titer test for cats, too.
We are back. So elevated liver enzymes, is that an early marker of liver cancer, or just could be so many different things in the liver that you don't know?
Yeah, it could be a marker of so many different things in the liver, ranging from very benign and nothing to very malignant and huge somethings. And so, you know, it's the liver is such a huge, vast organ. It's like the biggest organ we have other than the skin, that it takes a lot of disease in the liver before a dog is going to have signs. So that's why the liver enzymes on blood work are our first clue. And what I always say as a benchmark, if your dog has elevated liver enzymes that are detected on blood work, if your vet, you know, maybe first they prescribe an antibiotic, maybe they do like a liver support, like a denamarin or a liver support,
right, which I tried after you told me to.
You do that, and they still stay elevated between an 8 to 12 week period. So we're talking 2 to 3 months. If they stay elevated after that period, even if they're, they went down a titch. See, it's going in the right direction. Even if they go down a titch, but they're not normal, then that is indication for additional screening test, because you might catch your liver tumor early when it's small. You might catch the gallbladder disease before it's this big, gnarly, nasty gallbladder that needs to be removed. You might check and find evidence of like a hepatitis, something that is an inflammatory liver disease that actually needs real treatment. It's not just liver support. You need anti-inflammatories and other things. And so, you know, that's...
Or even pancreatitis, which is such a little understood by most of us. It's like your pancreas is inflamed. I guess I gave too much fat. But it's really more complex than that, right?
It is. But the whole point... Yes, it is. But the whole point is that the liver, those enzymes, they're an indicator that something is amiss. And if they've not improved with symptomatic supportive treatment over an 8 to 12 week period, the next step is really ultrasound.
And that's no big deal. It's not wildly expensive. It's not invasive.
Shaved belly. Most pets don't need to be sedated. Some do, but most don't. It's a belly shave, and there's a cost associated with it. Those are the biggest side effects, you know. And again, at the end of the day, we hope to come back and say, it just looks like this mild or that. But, you know, there is going to be you could be the one that the vet comes back and says, wow, there's a mass in the liver.
Yeah, like we're also surprised
early, or your dog has a horrible gallbladder problem. You know, there are going to be situations, and if it's you, then you're going to be thrilled that you got it checked early.
And you're going to be sorry for the rest of your life if you're like me that didn't get the blood work on my golden retriever Roma, who wound up dying in a 3-day period of pancreatitis, which they didn't insist. This was years ago. People, you know, vets weren't sophisticated. I sure as hell wasn't.
Right.
She wasn't really eating. She threw up a little bit. She was kind of lethargic, and blood wasn't drawn on day one when I went in. And so by day three, it was like, oh, my God, this is bad, and IV antibiotics, and it was too late. She was gone in days. And it's very hard to live with that when you find out, God, me and or the vet, I mean, it's a stick. It's a stick with a needle, and the miracle of all the information that can be gathered, and then what to do about it.
Well, and this is a perfect segue, if we can, into another case that I've dealt with recently. His name is Buster.
Okay.
And Buster is a 12-year-old Labrador Retriever. Still is. He's going strong. He's super great. So he had been a very healthy dog, and he went in because he had been coughing for a month, maybe two. Cough, 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 keeping the owners up at night, but otherwise was eating, drinking, not losing weight, feeling great. So he went in for this cough. The vet took his x-rays, and lo and behold, it looks like he has a primary lung tumor. You hear a repeating theme with me today, lung tumor. So
this one's going to be the red herring.
Right. So there was a solitary mass, a big honking mass in his lung. And in a 12-year-old dog with a solitary mass like that, 90% of the time, the vet is going to be right when they say, looks like your dog has lung cancer. Because, you know, just taking the odds, you know, lung cancer in that age, especially when he doesn't have a lot of symptoms, it is the more common age for it. So the owners, you know, the vet pretty much focused on this is cancer. There's really not anything else it's going to be cancer. And the owners are like, well, we don't really want to do anything. We're really hesitant. And the vet was like, well, just, you know, keep him happy. We'll give you a cough suppressant. And when his quality of life gets crummy, then you'll
put him to sleep.
So they went on for a couple weeks like this. And one night in the middle of the night, Buster is coughing so much. He's like coughing and vomiting up phlegm. And the owners are like beside themselves. So they race him into the emergency clinic.
And they think this is it. They probably think this is it. He's dying now.
But they were like, no, they were able to get him sedated and calmed down. And they said, let us get the rest of the night's sleep. We need to like regroup. So I get transferred this patient in the morning and I'm seeing him and I'm like, he had a low grade fever. And I'm looking at his x-rays and I was like, he had a little bit of change in his eye at the back of his eye called the retina, and that you sometimes see with infectious disease. And I said, you know, I called the owner and I said, your vet may be right. This may be a lung tumor and maybe it's infected. So he's got a low grade fever. I said, but we live in Chicago area and we have a lot of a fungal disease called blastomycosis. Blasto is a fungus that lives in the dirt and the grass. Dogs that snuffle out into the dirt, dirt grass can pick this fungus up, and it can show, usually it shows as a lot of like lymph nodes and big things in the chest, but it can make a solitary mass. And I said, pretty non-invasive test with light sedation. I can advance a needle right into the lung area, the lung mass. We'll take a sample. Let's just be sure. Let's just be sure that it's not that. And they agreed to it. Reluctantly, they agreed, but I really pressed on them. And you know what? Buster had blastomycosis.
Oh, my goodness.
It was not a lung tumor. We put him on antifungal, which is kind of like an antibiotic, but it's for a fungus.
Right.
Called an antifungal. And within a week, the cough stopped. Within 2 weeks, this mass is shrinking.
Oh, my God.
And within a month after he started his antifungal, that mass is completely gone. Buster never knew he's been sick.
Wow.
And so your point of, you get these x-rays, these early screening x-rays,
yes.
And you're like, ooh, it looks like a tumor. But you know what? It might not be. There are other things that it
yes.
can be. And especially in a dog who's not that symptomatic or having, you know, you get this information, ask for a referral maybe. You know, go to see someone or do an extra diagnostic. You know, there's always, it's not, cancer is not always the only thing on the list. There are other possibilities. And what I would say to pet owners listening is ask your veterinarian if a mass is found, say, well, what could it be? What are the possibilities? Like, give me the percentages. Is it
right.
You know, 90% chance or 90% chance cancer, 10% infection? You know, there are going to be other differentials and other possibilities, and it's okay for you to question your vet and to ask, because I keep Buster in mind all the time when I do an x-ray
yes.
and I say, looks like a tumor, and I'm
like
what?
But there was Buster.
It could be something else. So.
It could be the Buster. It could be the Buster syndrome.
And, you know, in the test that we did to do the lung sample, it was, you know, to Buster, the cost was a light sedation, didn't feel anything. And to the owners, you know, probably $250, maybe $300 test to get the sedation and the needle aspirate and sending it to the lab. So it's not cost prohibitive
right.
for everyone to do that. And if you do have insurance, then they're going to cover that.
That's right.
And so it's just that little extra step to say, let's just be sure before we give your dog a death sentence that, you know, it might not be. There can be other possibilities. So gather the information and then ask questions about it. Ask your vet. That's your responsibility, and to advocate for your pet and to say, well, what else could it be? And should I go see a specialist? And a lot of people hear the word go to a specialist and they think rack up the dollars.
Yes.
It only costs usually you know, you may walk out of a specialist for just the exam fee. The specialist
That's
may say,
right.
well, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to go in and drop $1,000 right off the bat. It means you're going to go and get additional information. And that's only going to cost you the cost of the exam fee. I have a ton of people that come to see me just for my information. We don't do anything. We don't do any other additional tests. They go back to their regular vet for that. But they're coming for my information and for my knowledge. And I always encourage people to do that.
I think that one of the things that's missing with primary vets and people is sometimes we know each other too well. We and the
right.
vets are pals, and we're like, that's just Jazzy. She's always lame or limping, or I don't know, she's got so much fur, I can't tell if she's really lost weight. And to go to a specialist, someone who's a new, fresh set of eyes, can mean a completely different view of something okay. that you and your own vet are taking for granted. And, you know, what a horror story for these people. Nearly would have put a dog to sleep who was suffering from a fungal infection that cleared up in weeks. And
right.
12 years old, I mean, you know, there are labs that live to 14 and 15. And you're mm-hmm. telling me Buster was, other than this poor guy, this cough, pretty solid, good citizen, healthy lab otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's really important. Early detection saves lives. And we don't mean that you always that you catch cancer early and treat it. You might not have cancer at all, but early detection of everything saves lives, whether it's pancreatitis or fungus.
Fungal infection.
Yes. Or
the earlier you catch it,
that's
the earlier you intervene, the earlier
the more you
the
can
more
do.
Successful you're going
to
be.
And just to tell you again, you can have a consultation with Dr. Donna and your own vet. It can be done over the telephone and over electronic transfer of records and images. And there are a number of people who listen to The Expert Vet and who listen to Dog Talk who've taken advantage of that. And by the way, pet health insurance will cover a second opinion, just saying. Mm-hmm. And those people have either gotten more comfortable that their own vet's evaluation was correct, or they got more information and their vet learned something new. Mm-hmm. One of the things Dr. Donna does, believe it or not, her whole life is not The Expert Vet radio show. She consults for many, many VCA clinics across the country. Vets just like your own have access to her because they're VCA hospitals. And she helps them figure out all of these fine-tuning, question mark, gray areas.
And I have to tell you, Tracy, all the cases we talked about today, Buster's case, Roxy and Leo, I did monthly case reports for over 3,000 doctors in this country. They were prime examples, and I used them as examples of, you know, the what's and whys to do what we're doing. And so, you know, they led the charge as an example.
And it's so important because we aren't just learning from you. Many other vets are learning too, and we have to all recognize we're all on a learning curve. And if you have a vet who doesn't want you to get a board-certified veterinary radiologist to look at films or says, I don't need to talk to some internist, I have to tell you that is just way scary close-minded. Everyone should be embracing all the support that's available for your pets. So you know how to find Dr. Donna. Just go to RadioPetLady.com. There's a way to reach her there, and you and your vet can be in touch with her. And be sure to look at the podcast library of The Expert Vet. Donna has given some amazing pieces of information over the months. And of course, anyone who wants to start saving up their air miles now and come to New York City, October 16th is the Pooch Party. We're taking over a major New York hotel. There'll be a red carpet for dogs that want to come in outfits and a ton of fun. And the next day is the film festival, and the centerpiece of it will be the roundtable with the Radio Pet Lady Network. Vets reaching out to all of you and giving you lots of good advice, just like we do on The Expert Vet every week. Thanks, Dr. Donna. Stay well, and we will talk again soon.
Take care.